The children of Israel have come out of Egypt. They came out of Egypt and came to Mount Sinai, from Egypt to Sinai. And there at Mount Sinai, Moses received the law. The Old Covenant is how we refer to it, what we have in our Old Testament, the Ten Commandments. He also received the instructions on how to build the tabernacle, which was this portable worship sanctuary, this tent that they would meet in and come to meet God and bring their animal sacrifices, which is the way that they would approach God. After a year at being at Mount Sinai, they left there and they went to the border of the Promised Land in Kadesh Barnea, and they sent 12 spies into the land. And when those 12 spies came back, 10 of them brought a negative report and so influenced the rest of the children of Israel that the children of Israel wouldn't go in. They wouldn't go into the Promised Land because they feared they would be killed. They feared their kids would be killed. And they started complaining against God and saying it would be better if we just died here in this wilderness. And so God answered that cry, if you will. And they would wander then for 40 years out here in the wilderness, for 40 years until that generation died off. And it would be their children that they were worried about that would actually grow up and be the ones that would go into the Promised Land. And so last week we were looking at 40 years have passed by and Moses is ready to bring them into the Promised Land. But he wants to, rather than a southern route, he wants to come up from the east. And so he wanted to go through the territory of Edom right here to come up the eastern side of the Dead Sea. But the Edomites would not allow him to come. And so they had to turn southward and go all the way down here around Edom. And as we looked at last week, the children of Israel began to complain again against God. And you can imagine, they've been wandering for 40 years. Now they're going away from the Promised Land because they can't go through the land of the Edomites. So they begin to complain. And remember, God sent the serpents among them. And the serpents began to bite the people, and the people began to die. And there was that great parallel, how Moses had put the bronze serpent on the pole, and whoever looks at it shall live. A great parallel, a picture of Jesus, how he was lifted up upon the cross, and whoever looks to him will be healed, will be saved, forgiven, and have eternal life. And so that was in chapter 21. Now we've come to chapter 22, and what's happened is they've come around now the land of Edom, and they're coming up here into this territory that's east of the Promised Land. And there's not only the Edomites and the Moabites and the Ammonites, but there's also the Amorites that are over there. And as Israel has gone up, God is beginning to give them the victory over these Canaanite type people. And so they've defeated Sihon, king of the Amorites, and his people, and they've defeated Og, king of Bashan. And now they're poised just across from Jericho in Moabite territory. And the king of Moab is afraid because Israel has already been wiping out these other people. So he's afraid for his people. His name is Balak, and he calls for help. He calls for this man named Balaam. And we're going to be reading about Balaam today. You guys have heard the story of Balaam's donkey before. That's what we're going to be looking at today. So Balak, the king of Moab, calls for Balaam to come over and curse the children of Israel so that he'll have a fighting chance against them. But Balaam can't curse these people because God has blessed these people. And so the only thing that comes out of Balaam's mouth are blessings when he comes over. So let's go ahead and take it up from verse 1 of chapter 22 of the book of Numbers, where we read, "Then the children of Israel moved and camped in the plains of Moab on the side of the Jordan across from Jericho. Now Balak, the son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was exceedingly afraid of the people because they were many, and Moab was sick with dread because of the children of Israel. So Moab said to the elders of Midian, 'Now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field.' And Balak the son of Zippor was king of the Moabites at that time. Then he sent messengers to Balaam the son of Beor at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of his people, to call him, saying, 'Look, a people has come from Egypt. See, they cover the face of the earth and are settling next to me. Therefore, please come at once. Curse this people for me, for they are too many for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed.' Again, Balak, the king of Moab, is afraid because he's seen what Israel has already done to the Amorites on the eastern side of the Jordan River. But really, there was no reason for Balak to fear because the children of Israel, they're forbidden to touch the Moabites. The reason they're forbidden to touch the Moabites is because the Moabites, they're family. Moab and Ammon are descendants of Lot. Lot was Abraham's nephew. It says in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 9, "Then the Lord said to me," Moses speaking, "do not harass Moab, nor contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land as a possession, because I have given Ar to the descendants of Lot as a possession." But Balak didn't know that. He didn't know the passage in Deuteronomy. So he's afraid of them as they come up. So again, he goes and he hires Balaam to come over. Now, Balaam is going to be way over here by the river, the Euphrates. That would put him, I think, most likely in present-day Iraq, ancient Babylon area, maybe in Syria. But he's way over there, and he's calling for him to come over into the land and to curse the children of Israel. And there's something about the blessings and cursings of the Old Testament. Have you noticed that? There's like a finality, a certainty to the words that they speak. When remember when Jacob went before his dad Isaac and he stole the blessing from his brother Esau? And then he went out and then Esau came in to get the blessing from Isaac. And Isaac was like, I've already blessed the one that was here. And Esau was like, don't you have any more blessings? And he says, no, I have blessed him and he shall be blessed. There was something, again, of a finality, a certainty about the blessings and the curses that were mentioned here in the Old Testament. And so this is what Balak longs for. And so he's hopeful to send for Balaam and to bring him over here. So we read in verse 7, "So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the diviner's fee in their hand. And they came to Balaam and spoke to him the words of Balak. And he said to them, 'Lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me.' So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam." Now, they went with what's called the diviner's fee. Balaam is an interesting character in the Bible because he can hear from the Lord, and yet he's referred to as a soothsayer. In the book of Joshua, chapter 13, verse 22, that's how he's called. In the New Living Translation, it says he used magic to tell the future. Other translations refer to him as a diviner or one who practices divination. And yet at the same time, it's like God is speaking to him as well. So it's an interesting combination that's going on with this character, Balaam. So the messengers of Balak have gone to Balaam and have asked for him to come. And so Balaam says, "Wait here and I'll come back to you." He first is going to go before God and see what God says. And so he says again, verse 8, "Lodge here tonight and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me." So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. Verse 9, "Then God came to Balaam and said, 'Who are these men with you?' So Balaam said to God, 'Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me saying, look, a people has come out of Egypt and they cover the face of the earth. Come now, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to overpower them and drive them out.'" Verse 12, "And God said to Balaam, 'You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed.'" What did God say? "You shall not go. You shall not curse the people." So, verse 13, "Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, 'Go back to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you.' And the princes of Moab rose and went to Balak and said, 'Balaam refuses to come with us.' Then Balak again sent princes more numerous and more honorable than they. And they came to Balaam and said to him, 'Thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come, curse this people for me.' Then Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, 'Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord my God to do less or more.'" Now, Balak, he sounds like the real deal here, doesn't he? The princes are saying, I'll certainly honor you greatly. And Balaam's saying, you know, you give me a whole house full of silver and gold, I just can only say what God tells me to say. He sounds really committed, doesn't he? But the rest of the Bible gives us a different insight on Balaam. We find that he is a lover of money. He wants that house full of silver and gold, and he'll do anything he can to get it, but he can't curse the children of Israel because God will not allow him to do that. We read in other passages of the Bible where Balaam is an example of what a false prophet is like, a false teacher. In 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15, it says of the false teachers, they have forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. So it shows us that he's a lover of money, and it doesn't matter what he has to do to get it. He's loving the wages of unrighteousness. Jude, same thing in the New Testament. He's talking about false prophets, false teachers. He says, woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, and perished in the rebellion of Korah. So the same thing is said of him here. They've run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, to get what they can get out of it. It's kind of interesting in Jude 11, isn't it, how he's put together here examples out of the Old Testament. Cain from Genesis chapter 4, the story of Cain and Abel. And then, of course, our passage here with Balaam and Korah. Remember, we were there just a few weeks ago in Numbers chapter 16, that rebellion that Korah raised against Moses, and uses them as an example of the false teachers and false prophets of his day. So Balaam, as we piece the other passages of the Bible together, we see really more where his heart is at, that he really wants that house that's filled with silver and gold, if you will. He's a lover of money, and this is going to drive him now to go back before God, and, if you will, persuade God to allow him to go to Balak and meet with the children of Israel. So we read in verse 19, Balaam saying, now, therefore, please, you also stay here tonight, that I may know what more the Lord will say to me. Verse 20, and God came to Balaam at night and said to him, if the men call to you, rise and go with them, but only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do. So Balaam rose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the princes of Moab. Now, verse 12, God said, you shall not go. Verse 20, God says, rise and go. So which is it? You shall not go, or rise and go? I think what we see here is God's perfect will and God's permissive will. God's perfect will was what? Don't go. God's permissive will, in other words, what he is permitting, what he's allowing, is for Balaam to go ahead and go. Can you see where we can get in a situation like that, where we're seeking direction from the Lord and we know deep down inside what he wants us to do, but we kind of keep going back? God, what about this? What about that? This is a warning, I think, because God will allow, I think, his permissive will to be done. God's perfect will is always going to be better. I want to tell you that right now. Romans chapter 12, verse 2, it says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Rather than being bent according to the standards of the world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Stay in God's word. And that way you can stay, I believe, in the center of God's will as you're staying in fellowship with him. Well, now, as Balaam has, if you will, been given the green light to go, God is going to chasten him for it. We read in verse 22, then God's anger was aroused because he went, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. And he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. Now the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand, and the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. So Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back onto the road. Now, as they're heading out on the way, the donkey can see the angel of the Lord with sword drawn, ready to kill. But Balaam can't. Balaam's blinded to it. So as the donkey turns to the side, Balaam just gets mad and starts hitting on his donkey here. Verse 24, then the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on this side and a wall on that side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed herself against the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. Then the angel of the Lord went further and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam's anger was aroused and he struck the donkey with his staff. Now, again, the donkey, you might say, has spiritual insight. Balaam does not. The donkey can see the angel of the Lord, but Balaam has been blinded, hasn't he? Blinded because of his desire for riches. And so spiritually, he's not in tune to what is taking place right here. We got to be careful of the same thing, because the riches of this world, and I'm not just talking about money, I'm talking about what this world has to offer, it can blind us to spiritual things. If we're so caught up in that, so striving after something that is not in the center of God's word, we're not going to be positioned to really be able to hear from the Lord. And again, that's where it comes back to our relationship, staying in fellowship with the Lord on an ongoing basis. We position ourselves at that time to really be able to receive and to hear from the Lord. And so we read in verse 28, then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey. And she said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you have struck me these three times? And Balaam said to the donkey, because you have abused me. I wish there were a sword in my hand, and now I would kill you. So the donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey on which you have ridden ever since I became yours to this day? Was I ever disposed to do this to you? And he said, no. You kind of feel like I'm watching a Disney cartoon, you know? And you expect that, watching a Disney cartoon, that the animals are talking. You don't really expect it in real life to happen. But this is what is happening, because God supernaturally has opened the mouth of this donkey. And I think the amazing thing isn't so much that the donkey can speak, but that Balaam is arguing with his donkey. And Balaam, it's like he's so dense at this point. He's so dense that he doesn't recognize what is going on. So driven again by, I think, a fleshly appetite, rather than, again, being in the center of God's word. The 2 Peter 2 passage that I put up, where Balaam is a picture, a type of a false teacher or a false prophet. Again, it says they've forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. The next verse says, but he was rebuked for his iniquity. A dumb donkey speaking with a man's voice restrained the madness of the prophet. So we can get a picture again where Balaam is at right here. He's not in his right mind, if you will, as he's following after this. It's kind of a side note, too. God can use a donkey. He can use us, right? He's chosen the foolish things of this world to confound the wise. And when you look at the church, myself included, God has chosen not the wise of this world, but he's chosen the foolish of this world to be his mouthpiece, to be those lights that go out and shine brightly. That's encouraging. It's encouraging that he can take us and use us for his glory in the time that we have here on earth. Verse 31 tells us, then the Lord opened Balaam's eyes, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. And he bowed his head and fell flat on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to stand against you because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside from me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely I would also have killed you by now and let her live. And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know you stood in the way against me. Now, therefore, if it displeases you, I will turn back. Then the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you, that you shall speak. So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. The best thing that Balaam's done to this point is acknowledge that he sinned. That's what we talked about, I think, last week. Best thing that we can do when we get off base is be true before God, be transparent before him, and acknowledge that we've sinned. And when we do that, we again position ourselves to get right with God and be cleansed from all unrighteousness, if you will. Balaam said, if this displeases you, literally, if this is evil in your eyes, back in verse 32, the angel of the Lord has says, your way is perverse before me. Other translations, your way is reckless. It's contrary. The New Living says you are stubbornly resisting me. Yes, your way is wrong. Yes, this is wrong for what you're doing, but go ahead and go. And yet only speak the words that I give to you. So in this next section, we'll see him coming to Balak, and we'll see him being brought up to the mountaintop to curse the children of Israel. And we'll see what happens here in verse 36 of chapter 22. Now, when Balak heard that Balaam was coming, he went out to meet him at the city of Moab, which is on the border at the Arnon, the boundary of the territory. Then Balak said to Balaam, did I not earnestly send to you calling for you? Why did you not come to me? Am I not able to honor you? And Balaam said to Balak, look, I have come to you. Now, have I any power at all to say anything? The word that God puts in my mouth, that I must speak. So Balaam went with Balak, and they came to Kirjath Huzoth. Then Balak offered oxen and sheep, and he sent some to Balaam and to the princes who were with him. So it was the next day that Balak took Balaam and brought him up to the high places of Baal, that from there he might observe the extent of the people. So as he makes it to Moab, and he comes to Balak, he now is taken to a high place on a hilltop to overlook the children of Israel. The sacrifices have been made, and now it's time to hear the word that will come from God. Chapter 23, then Balaam said to Balak, build 7 altars for me here, and prepare for me here 7 bulls and 7 rams. And Balak did just as Balaam had spoken. And Balak and Balaam offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Then Balaam said to Balak, stand by your burnt offering, and I will go. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you. So he went to a desolate height, and God met Balaam, and he said to him, I've prepared the 7 altars, and I've offered on each altar a bull and a ram. Then the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, return to Balak, and thus you shall speak. So he returned to him, and there he was standing by his burnt offering, he and all the princes of Moab. And he took up his oracle and said, and here comes the word from the Lord. Balak, the king of Moab, has brought me from Aram, from the mountains of the east. Come curse Jacob for me and come denounce Israel. How shall I curse whom God has not cursed? And how shall I denounce whom the Lord has not denounced? For from the top of the rocks I see him, and from the hills I behold him. There, a people dwelling alone, not reckoning itself among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob, or number 1/4 of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and let my end be like his. Then Balak said to Balaam, what have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and look, you have blessed them bountifully. So he answered and said, must I not take heed to speak what the Lord has put in my mouth? So Balaam does hear from the Lord, and yet it's not what Balak wants to hear. As he goes up, all he can again speak are the words of blessings over Israel. Israel is like the sand of the sea in multitude. They're like the stars of the heavens, if you will, in numerous. And may my end be like theirs. And Balak gets upset because of it, because it's not words of curses, but further words of blessings. And what's going to happen is Balak is going to go ahead and he's going to take Balaam to another mountaintop. Maybe the vantage point from here will be better and you can curse them from this angle. So he'll take him to another mountaintop and Balaam will have a second oracle that'll speak. And then that's nothing but a blessing as well. So Balak takes him to a third high place. And again, Balaam speaks nothing but blessing at that time as well. I want to go ahead and just read a couple of verses of these prophecies, of these oracles that Balaam speaking, even the one we just ended with here in verse 10, where Balaam said, who can count the dust of Jacob or number 1/4 of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous and let my end be like his. Do you see what he's longing for there? He's longing really to finish well, to come to the end of his life and to end that life within the blessing of God. And man, that's such a good thing. We're all running a race, aren't we? We're all going to come to the end of that race. And I think that's what every single one of us want, is to finish well, not to do good for like this window of our life and then backslide and fall away and get into all kinds of bad stuff and then die and then not kind of wasted and squandered those last years. We don't want that. We want to stand before the Lord and hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, we've fought that good fight and we've kept the faith. We've finished our race and now there's that crown that's waiting, you know? So the longing to finish well and to do that is, I think, what Balaam desires here is really what I believe all of us desire. Unfortunately for Balaam, that's not going to be the case. He's not going to finish well in all of this. In his second oracle, in chapter 23, if you look over at verse 19, Balaam says in Numbers 23, 19, God is not a man that he should lie, nor a son of man that he should repent. Has he said, and will he not do? Or has he spoken, and will he not make good? In other words, God is the God who fulfills his promises. He promised Israel the promised land, and the promised land they will receive. There's no way you can curse them, and they're not going to go into the promised land, because God said they would. God's promises are sure, and God's promises to you and me are sure as well. He's going to make it so that we can make it all the way home. You know, be confident of this very thing, that he that has begun a good work in you will bring it to completion. He will be able to present you faultless before him. Do you believe that? Believe it, because it's true, because God said it. And God is the one who fulfills his promises. Now, for Balak and the Moabites, God's will is going to be done, and they're going to go into the promised land because God promised them the promised land. A little aside here, that land was promised to Israel. Many believe, and I would agree with that, Genesis chapter 12, unconditionally. God unconditionally promised Abraham and his descendants that land in the Middle East. And so when we look at that land in the Middle East, this isn't just something that was way back in the Old Testament under the Old Covenant, but this is something that God will fulfill, because God is not a man that he should lie. And I believe he's brought Israel back into their national homeland, because when we look at the prophecies, Israel has to be in their land prior to the second coming of Christ. That's just the way the prophecy is going to work its way out. It's not just that, though. That land is promised to them, not just for the end times, but for the kingdom age. Ezekiel 40 through 48, Israel will inhabit that land that God promised to Abraham. Again, I believe, unconditionally, back in Genesis chapter 12. Just an aside with that. And so what we have here is Balak taking Balaam to three different locations, and three different times Balaam goes up and speaks not curses but words of blessings over Israel. So if we come to the end of those three in chapter 24, verse 10, it says, "Then Balak's anger was aroused against Balaam. And he struck his hands together, and Balak said to Balaam, I called you to curse my enemies, and look, you have bountifully blessed them these three times. Now therefore, flee to your place. I said I would greatly honor you, but in fact, the Lord has kept you back from honor." So Balaam said to Balak, "Did I not also speak to your messengers whom you sent to me, saying, if Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the word of the Lord to do good or bad of my own will. What the Lord says, that I must speak." To his credit, he did what God asked him to do. He didn't curse the children of Israel. He simply spoke what God told him to do. Now, Balaam is going to give a fourth oracle. It's really a final word concerning the future of Israel and Moab. And within this, we have what many believe is a prophecy of the coming of Jesus. If we read in chapter 24, beginning from verse 14, Balaam says, "And now indeed I am going to my people. Come, I will advise you what this people will do to your people in the latter days." So he took up his oracle and said, "The utterance of Balaam, the son of Beor, and the utterance of the man whose eyes are opened, the utterance of him who hears the words of God and has the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, who falls down with eyes wide open. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, a scepter shall rise out of Israel and batter the brow of Moab and destroy all the sons of tumult." the star, the scepter. This verse looked at by many as a prophecy of the birth of Jesus, that there would come a ruler, one who would come to rule over Israel. In Genesis 49:10, it tells us that the scepter shall not depart from Judah, or a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. There's coming a ruler, and he's going to reign, and he'll end up reigning forever and ever. Now, the wise men came from the east, believed to be from the same area that Balaam came from the east. And some speculate that the wise men would know of not just this prophecy that a star shall come out of Jacob, and believing that this is the star they saw that led them to Bethlehem, to the baby Jesus, but also they would have been, many speculate, familiar with the prophecies in the book of Daniel. Because remember, Daniel lived his entire life over in the area of Babylon. And in the book of Daniel, we have a mathematical prophecy in Daniel chapter 9 as to the exact time that the Messiah is going to come and give his life at Calvary. So there possibly was, among the wise men in that area, an expectation of the coming of the Messiah. And again, tying this verse into the star that would lead them ultimately to Bethlehem. We come to the end of this oracle, at the end of chapter 24, and it simply says in verse 25, "So Balaam rose and departed and returned to his place. Balak also went his way." End of story? We could only wish. Not end of story. Even though Balaam is not seen in the next chapter shows us how the children of Israel are cursed. And it's not because Balaam cursed them with his words, but it's because Israel brought a curse upon themselves. The children of Israel began to worship other gods. They were influenced, they were seduced by the women of Moab, the women of Midian, and they began to worship their gods in a very immoral way, and that brought the judgment of God upon them. And so many of them began to die at that time. What we find as we read forward a little bit, if you want to turn to chapter 31 of Numbers, we find that it was actually Balaam that counseled Balak, the king of Moab, on how to bring a curse upon Israel. Though Balaam could not do it himself, Balak could do that by leading Israel astray. In chapter 31, we have the children of Israel going over and attacking the Midianites. And yet when they went there, they killed all the males, but they didn't kill the women. And so when they bring the women as part of the spoil back, Moses is upset. And notice Numbers 31, beginning from verse 15. It says, "And Moses said to them, 'Have you kept all the women alive? Look, these women caused the children of Israel,'" notice, "'through the counsel of Balaam, to trespass against the Lord in the incident of Peor, and there was a plague among the congregation of the Lord.'" So though Balaam could not, with his mouth, curse the children of Israel, he could teach Balak how to throw a stumbling block in front of them and lead them into sin so that they ultimately would curse themselves. Jesus, when he was rebuking the church of Pergamos in Revelation chapter 2, Jesus said, "I have a few things against you because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit sexual immorality." What did Balaam do? He taught Balak how to let Israel bring a curse upon themselves by falling into idolatry and the immoral ways that they would worship their foreign gods. So Balaam, in the end, didn't finish well. If you're still in chapter 31, we find that Balaam, even though he went to his place, he is back here at this time with the Midianites. In Numbers chapter 31, verse 8, it says of Israel, "They killed the kings of Midian with the rest of those who were killed, Evi, Rechem, Zur, Hur, and Reba. The five kings of Midian, Balaam, the son of Beor, they also killed with the sword." So did he finish well? He didn't finish well. His desire was to finish well, but he didn't do it. And so in closing, my final word to us is we've got one life to live. We've got one life where we can serve the Lord and honor him. Let's be careful that we don't let the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches to choke out the opportunity that we have to be able to be in the center of God's will, to allow God's perfect will to be done in our lives. All right?